the enduring worth of theosophy. Well, we must ask ourselves the question, what is the enduring worth of anything in this world in which we live? We probably have found ourselves coming to this study of theosophy because we were looking for the enduring worth of life. We ask ourselves many questions coming in this direction because we were looking for answers. Why the suffering? Why the chaos? We come to theosophy to find what is enduring and what has value. Theosophy is eternal, boundless, immutable, and omnipresent. It is the eternal. We come to understand it from a long line of perfected beings who have checked, tested, and verified all of this knowledge and kept a record of man's spiritual nature. This record has been recorded in writing, but as well as in the natures and in the intelligence of perfected human beings who have once walked this earth, but no longer can because of the cycle that we are in. But how can we come to understand a divine being? What does theosophy speak of that? Well, we have always in our life have heard of beings or people greater than ourselves. Jesus, Buddha, Zoroaster, Confucius, Plato, Pythagoras. We've read of angels and gods, heroes, saviors, and friends of humanity. What are these beings? Well, theosophy tells us that we are those beings. We are those beings of light, that we are spiritual beings. We are divine in our very nature. All knowledge also resides within each and every one of us. We are that divine being, but the materialistic mind rejects that. How can that be? Well, if we are spiritual beings, we know that we have descended into matter. All life is a projection of that supreme or that unknown, that unmanifested, that is visualized as a great breath coming forth. And that great breath is slowly moving through time and space, ever expanding our consciousness, ever moving and ever changing. So what is that divine? What is that spark? What is that unchanging aspect of ourselves? Well, theosophy also teaches that man is of a septenary nature. He is sevenfold. There is that part of man that is eternal, boundless, immutable, omnipresent, not manifest. But as it descends into matter, it takes on a different aspect. And as spirit descends into matter, its first manifestation is the idea, is the, they call it the logos, the coming forth of this divine spark. And it manifests in the highest aspect or highest understanding that we can have of life. And these ideas are expressed in theosophy. They call it Buddhi. And the term Buddha has been adopted from this understanding. A high spiritual being. But as this spirit descends, it descends into that aspect that is known as mind, or the intelligent aspect of the universe. Atma is all-knowing. Buddha is spiritual consciousness. Mind is human consciousness. But when mind blends with desire, we have animal consciousness. And from this animal consciousness, there is a life that is gathered around a human form that is first infused with the life, breath, that co-mingles with the astral, and therefore is produced a material being. Well, that's the sevenfold nature of man, that there is that higher aspect, Atma, Buddhi, Manas. And it is simply our eternal nature, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. It does not die. It is eternal, boundless, immutable, and omnipresent. So, how can we know of this God or this beingness? How do we know of that which does not change? We are told that we can sit in the middle of the two opposites and observe in that unchanging position. Not pulled by our lower nature, but realizing that we are spiritual beings. By having control over one's lower nature, one opens up those spiritual channels. And this is how man becomes or re-becomes a god. For man has the potential to perfect one's his self. Man is not a poor, miserable sinner, but a being of light, of hope, of courage, and of joy. But how does this happen? Well, through karma and reincarnation. Put it simply, we all know what karma is, cause and effect, action and reaction. We know it. We see it. We know that karma is a law of nature. And that karma, that cause and effect, has built up energy that needs to be assimilated. That's done through reincarnation. We, life after life, through cause and effect, have created a world in which we now live in. We see the world as material, but if you see behind the veil, you see that other aspect of the astral, the causal plane, from which appears the material. So life is ever the evolution from light into darkness, or darkness into light. We visualize the great breath, the coming forth of vibration, the coming forth of all of life and all existence, all of matter, because spirit and matter are both are different sides or the same of the same coin. They both exist together. So why are we doing this? Why are we here? What is our duty? What is our responsibility? Where are we going? All these answers we must answer for ourselves. The universe is here for the experience of the soul, ever evolving, never ceasing, ever moving forward, always changing. And we, as human life, clings to that changing part, and therefore suffering is the result. We are told that the realm of non-attachment, that we are not what we see, we are more than that. In fact, we are that. Ever evolving, our consciousness. And as our consciousness evolves, our forms change, evolve. That is that forward motion. We are moving in space around an unknown center, which we cannot fathom, but around which our universe revolves in space, ever moving, ever changing. So the only thing that we can expect is change. So how can we endure this life? By taking an impersonal approach, an impersonal view, that we are not separate from anything else in the universe and in life. We are part and parcel of that unity. And the only way that we can realize that is by doing our duty. And what is our duty? Our duty is to our fellow man, to each other. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We have been told by many sages and saviors of what the path is. The path is one of love. The path is one of forgiveness. The path is the one of compassion. Compassion is developed through intelligent understanding of the laws of the world or of nature. We are on a journey, but it is not a journey of chaos. It's a journey of intelligence unfolding within itself. We are to search in our own nature for that one constant, that observer, that perceiver, that stands witness to the ever-changing panorama of life. We are not that change. We are that perceiver. So all the knowledge lies within us. These are words that we have to say to ourselves because we don't believe them anymore. We have forgotten them. All the knowledge of theosophy lies within us, and we are only trying to uncover it. And how do we uncover it? Well, by recognizing that there are others who have gone through this journey long before we have and have set signposts along the way to remind us of who and what we are. So the journey is not of the moment, but is of eternity. We don't live for today. We live for tomorrow. We live for the future. We live for a better world that we imagine. And through will and perseverance, it will manifest. For our ideas are the creative force in the universe. The ideas that we hold manifest. The ideas that we hold to be true manifest into reality. The journey is ours. The enduring worth of theosophy is ours. If you want it, it is here. And as HPB said, this document, this secret doctrine, has been called forth by those who've wanted it. So, the knowledge is present. In no other time have we had it written down for us. We've had to sit at the feet of a wise one and listen and remember and burn it into our very nature so that we can recall it in the material world in which we live. That's why we were said, meditate, concentrate on these ideas so that when you are in waking life, they will manifest, your meditations will manifest. Ideas rule the world. Well, these are a few of the enduring worth of theosophical ideas, by far not all of them. So we'll open it up for questions and comments on perhaps what has been aroused within you during this conversation. That is there a question or a comment that one may have. Yes, SL.
From what has been said, the enduring worth of theosophy is that it is an expression of truth. And yet, as we go out in the world, science proclaims to have the truth. A lot of different religions and philosophies claim to have the truth. Is there a measure that we can apply to an idea to know if it is of the nature of truth and has eternal worth?
Well, yes, the idea of truth is both.
Got it.
Is those truths which are temporary, and then those truths which are everlasting. How do we know the difference between the transitory truths and the eternal truths? Well, truth is of the nature of unity. Truth is the nature of brotherhood, of universal brotherhood. That this truth cannot be applied to just one or one group of people or just one person. This truth is universal. And it applies to everyone. Now, science, as philosophy and as religion, have bits and pieces of the truth because they do not admit to themselves that there is this boundless, immutable, omnipresent source of all of life. Their manifestation or their understanding of this deific principle, this absolute, is God. And God, therefore, is limited because God is a being. And this unknown beingness, it pervades the universe. It is space and everything in it. So science gets glimpses of the realities. Einstein, for example, he expressed ideas that are found in the secret doctrine. In fact, it is said that he had a copy of that near him. For every act, every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. So, science is evolving, just as our consciousness is evolving. As man consciousness evolves, science will become more and more universal, and not in a particular sense. But will be its application can be applied in a more universal way. I don't know if you have another further comment. Yes, SL.
If something is true, we shouldn't have to rely on the authority. An outside authority, whether in science, philosophy, or religion, it should be something that's self-evident, that each can know for themselves, check, test, and verify, regardless of their condition, their race, their creed, their organization, as long as they are a thinking being. Capable of thought and self-reflection, they should be able to determine for themselves what is eternal truth.
Yes, because if in our real nature, we are an aspect of this absolute, we have the ability to understand everything. But if we do not search and look, we cannot develop that faculty in us. It has come or become dormant. That these truths that we talk about in theosophy have to be self-evident. If we do not recognize the truth in them, we will not hold on to them. They will pass us by. Because we're living in a material world, and we have been clouded by our perceptions. We deny the spiritual being. And theosophy is like shaking us. Come, wake up. Wake up. You're a spiritual being. And I guess that is the responsibility or the duty of a companion, to help wake up our fellow companions or our fellow humans. That's why theosophy is trying to be kept alive in the world. If these ideas aren't kept alive, what do you imagine would happen? What would be the result? But, the world will never be without theosophy. It may be hidden for a time, but it will reappear, as it has now. So are we going to take this opportunity to spread, broadcast these ideas? SL?
One of the truths that seems to come down to us through the ages from all directions, from great sages, is that we cannot rely on knowing the truth through our senses. Why is it that we cannot rely on our senses to know the truth? Because that seems to be how scientists in particular and people in general determine what is true, what is objectively real to them through their senses. Why can we not rely on that?
Well, the Gita says we cannot trust our senses because they are ever changing and they can be colored by many things. So our senses are transitory. They're changing. But what is not changing is the perceiver. The perceiver sees the change. So that's how our consciousness evolves, by witnessing the change. And know that you are not the change, but you are the witness. So, that's like standing between good and bad, being able to observe both, but being affected by neither. So I guess we're all pretty well confirmed that we are these spiritual beings stuck in these bodies. How did we get that way, huh? I think ZZ has a question. Could someone please read that? JC, yes? Microphone? Hi, Mike.
Okay, it says, how can we understand the Trinity as unchanging if it periodically descends into matter? Isn't that a change of state?
Well, we have to say, well, change of what state? The matter it enters into doesn't change, it transmutes. We see it as change, but it's just forming into something else. Matter is not stagnant. Matter is always in motion. You know, and if we look back 100 years to now, great change in the physical world, but also in the other, in the intellectual world. And a change.
We have a question?
Yes.
So then when spirit descends into matter, or as the question is stated, when the Trinity descends or comes into matter, we wonder, is that change of state a change that the Trinity undergoes? You know, for instance, if it's cold outside and I put my coat on before I go out, well, I've put on the coat, and but I haven't changed. It's just that I'm wearing a new vestment appropriate to the external conditions, but my internal conditions are the same, aren't they?
Yes, it does not. Your internal conditions do not change. You just put on another coat, another layer of matter. And that is how, when we say our septenary nature, the spirit descends into matter. But it's still spirit. It just takes on a different coat. The analogy is quite appropriate. Yes, JCS.
Well, another analogy we can use, and ancient people always did this, was to use the sun. The sun is enduring. It is the source. It can be the energizer, the creative source. It can be a preservative. It can destroy, but it always is. And the conditions that change it have to do with the terrestrial plane. So wouldn't that be the same as spirit changing state or being veiled by the states of matter?
Yes, we think that's an appropriate analogy, is that everything is spirit, is light, you know, even in the darkness. You know, in the darkness, we don't see separateness. You know, it's sort of like a profound mystery. You know, the idea of separateness, can we imagine not being separate? What part of our nature is not separate? Through our perception, we perceive, and so our perception is of separateness. But we are told we are not separate. So what part of us is not separate? All of us, all aspects of us are not separate. That's what is the great paradox. We see ourselves as separate, but we affect each other tremendously. You know, the air we breathe, we share. The molecules that leave our body and perhaps inhabit other bodies, we have impressed them, and we have sent them on their way. Again, we are in constant motion. And all levels of our physical life, we don't have the same body we had yesterday. Even though sometimes we feel like we know that. So you know, it's, but we're constantly in change. So the ideas that we hold are constantly manifesting. So that's how we change the world. Change our ideas. Yes, L.
So the answer to the question about changing and unchanging really is a matter of perspective. And we're thinking of the example when we're standing on the surface of the earth, we're told we're spinning around at 18,000 miles an hour, but it doesn't seem that way to us. It seems, in fact, stationary, unless, of course, we're in orbit and we're looking down at the earth and we see that it, in fact, is turning around. So we might say that the Trinity or Atma Buddhi Manas seems unchanging to us, because as we find ourselves now, we sense that there's a part of our nature that hasn't changed throughout all our life. And that's that threefold aspect. And there's a part of our nature that has changed, the personality. But that Trinity itself, that Atma Buddhi Manas, from another perspective, we see is evolving, is unfolding, is on a journey of evolution of its own that never had a beginning or an ending. So we think in the further chat, it talks about the paradox. The Trinity descends into matter, and for our outer sense, it changed state. But remember that we all see with our outer senses, and the inner senses see no change happen at all, because the unmanifested is always manifested and vice versa. It is a paradox. So we think we have to answer the question based on our perspective, as the chat shows.
Yes, and everything is through self-realization. Well, read that chat again, because SL, could you read it? Your mic? No? SL?
This chat, second chat, is in response to the first chat on the unchanging or changing state of the Trinity. And it states, the Trinity descends into matter, and for our outer senses, it changed state. But remember that we all see with our outer senses, and the inner senses see no change happen at all, because the unmanifested is always manifested, and vice versa. It is a paradox. So we think there that the unmanifested remains unmanifested, but in a period of evolution, an aspect of it is manifested. So there's always the changeless and the changing.
Right.
We see the changing with our senses, but the unchanging we have to see with our mind, our inner states of awareness.
Our consciousness.
Yeah.
Our consciousness, which is unchanging. Is there a voice in the silence? Yes, L.
Why is it that only the few are looking for some enduring worth? Many seem to be, if not most, seem to be quite satisfied or preoccupied with the worth, the value of fame, of fortune, of wealth, of supply, of power. We know these things don't endure. You know, there are ups and downs, highs and lows, and yet people don't seem to realize that in general. And we think that most human beings would be on the path of searching for something enduring. Wouldn't just be a few. Why is that?
Why are some looking for truth and some are satisfied with the present life? And because they think there is no other life, that this is it, that you come once and then you're gone and you live in eternity. Well, that idea is completely false in the sense that we are eternal beings and that this is not one life. There are many lives. And and that karma and reincarnation are a fact in nature. Karma needs a way or an avenue to work, and reincarnation is that avenue, is the working out of that universal law. So we reap what we have sown, and we are sowing now to reap tomorrow. SL?
There is another chat. Would you like me to read it?
Yes, please.
People in general like the easy way and are very sure that they have the truth in knowing what they know, and it is just comfortable. The few will never be content because they know that theosophy must go on, and we are all helpers of preserving the truth for all mankind forever.
Well, the first part of that, again, what was that?
People in general like the easy way and are very sure that they have the truth in knowing what they know, and it is just comfortable.
Yes. Well, we think that's a sign of the age of great materialism. When everything is coming so fast, but it's in our mind that it's coming so fast. You know, we become comfortable with the pleasures of life. But when you can be comfortable with the pleasures of life and then understand or see that there is so much suffering in the world, there comes a point in any incarnation where our compassion is stirred for others. And when we realize, or when it is realized that we are a unity, and what happens to one happens to all. So the time that we live in now is very, very selfish. Very selfish. You know, and being unselfish is the exception. But we cannot say that universally is that families show us how to be unselfish. You know, caring for others shows us how to be unselfish. We should say that being selfless is probably the exception, you know, of giving up of all. As it says in the Gita, be unattached to the fruits of one's labor. Do it because it has to be done. Do it because you're helping. If we can go about life and alleviate suffering without and cause no pain, You know, that's quite an accomplishment. Again, there's another chat.
There's another chat, but we were thinking in terms of the previous chat that if people don't search for truth because what they think they know is easy and comfortable, then the key is suffering.
Correct.
Because it's the personal experience of pain and suffering that makes our assumed truths uneasy and no longer comfortable for us. And we begin to question that. And fortunate is the person that doesn't have to wait. But there is a purpose, a value, an enduring worth, we might say, to our suffering. So the next chat is, if we are to discern truth about sense data through anything but our senses, what is the confirmation that it has been experienced by others? The chat is pointing to the idea that what everyone sees, what we see, everyone can see objectively. And so we can all identify the color red and know what we're talking about. But if we start to rely on truth through faculties within, how can we confirm that with the experience of others? How's that achieved?
Interesting question.
Well, we were just...
Yeah, please.
Well, to that point, that it is said that for ages, sages and seers and wise human beings investigated these things, but none of those observations were assumed to be true until they were checked, tested, and verified with the observations of others and through ages of experience. So the way we can confirm it is through the sharing of ideas, through the interchange, through in association with others, with like-minded thinkers. That's one way we confirm our inner sensations. And also, sense data is not necessarily agreed upon by everybody. Scientists have proven that even when it comes to sounds or colors, not everybody universally experiences them the same way. Just think of the colorblind individual. It's a prime example of people who see a color and others don't.
Yes.
JCS has a question.
JCS, please.
What just came to mind was the great range of perception. When we think of our artist friends, especially watercolorists, their ability to sense the outer world and to see a remarkable range of nuance of color is so far above my experience in life. And it's like the musicians who know instrumentation and who can read the notes, their perception of sound is so far above. And there are even those who see sound and hear color. So all of that is changing. All of that is development. It's all external to the power to perceive. And that power is what endures.
Well, we have filled 1 hour up with theosophical ideas. And we try to do this each time we meet to strengthen our association. So we like to remind you of our next meeting on Wednesday, and then on Friday, and then again next Sunday. Again, all activities at this lodge are done on a voluntary basis of time, service, and money, and all are welcome to participate. Our meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Bye-bye.